Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what it feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
I was living alone that winter. This was about 3 years ago, early December, right before the holidays. I'd been working late a lot, so when a snowstorm rolled in that night, I figured I'd just stay home, make something simple for dinner, and catch up on some stuff around the house. My neighborhood was dead quiet. Most of the houses were older families or retired people who didn't go out much in the winter. Around 9 p.m., I walked into the living room and noticed a truck's headlights moving slowly down my street. At first, I assumed it was a snowplow, but as it got closer, I realized that it was just a regular pickup with a cheap-looking plow attachment on the front. Nothing official. No markings, no lights on top. Just an older white truck with a dented bumper. He drove past my house slowly enough that I thought he was lost or checking an address, but I didn't think much of it. He looped back around maybe 10 minutes later. This time he drove even slower, practically crawling past my house. And when he reached the edge of my driveway, he stopped for a split second, like he was looking at it, or at me. I shut the blinds. I still wasn't freaked out at this point, just annoyed because I assumed it was some neighbor's buddy trying to make a few extra bucks plowing driveways.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. On the track, my car's look is everything, but today, I'm talking about more than just paint schemes. I'm talking about my favorite games at Chumba Casino. Check out exclusives like Stampede Fury and my own King Croc Fury. It's just as wild as my car looked in Texas. With over 200 games and new ones weekly, play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
About 20 minutes went by. Then the knocking started. Just a soft, almost polite knock at my front door. Barely audible over the wind. I froze because nobody knocks on my door that late unless something is wrong. I walked to the peephole and nobody was there. Weird, I thought, but I let it go. But not much later, the knocking came again, this time from the window next to the door. A few quick taps. I opened the blinds a tiny bit, expecting to see somebody standing right there, but there was nothing. Just my porch covered in fresh snow and the storm blowing sideways across my yard. I stepped back, feeling my chest tighten a bit. I went back to doing the dishes, admittedly getting a little annoyed now, thinking either some dumb kids are playing a prank or the worst case scenario, which would be everybody's worst nightmare. Basically an unhinged crazy serial killer playing with its food. I'm quite the thinker, so my mind was messing with me, but I wasn't taking it too serious at this point either. Then another knock. This time at the back door. Only 15 feet or so from where I was in the kitchen. I grabbed the biggest knife I owned and slowly made my way toward the back door. I didn't see anyone. Again, nothing at all. All I saw were fresh footprints leading up to the door and then stopping. No footprints going away. No trail. Just a single set right up to the glass. I felt my entire body tense up. I went around turning off lights, trying to make it look like I wasn't home. Not that it mattered because it was obvious somebody knew I was. Minutes later, came another knock. This one came from the side window near the dining room. Same strength and same rhythm. I was thoroughly creeped out now, I'll admit. It's at the point where it's not funny anymore, even if you're a dumb kid looking for a reaction. I had a horrible gut feeling but wasn't sure what to do after checking the window and nobody was there. I swear on my life, I saw the corner of somebody's coat disappear behind the edge of my house, but it was so quick I couldn't give details. At that point, I wanted to call the police, but I didn't want to seem paranoid, especially if it was just some drunk guy or a confused neighbor. So I waited it out for another hour. No more knocks, no truck, and no movement outside. Eventually, everything got quiet again. It was close to midnight, so I figured I'd go downstairs and play some games or watch some videos until I got tired. My basement was just recently finished and cozy and my favorite place to decompress, with a sliding glass door that opened out to the backyard. I sat down on my PC, got zoned out, and forgot all about the weird knocking for a bit. About an hour later, I got this sudden awful feeling, like something was right behind me, and I got an intense feeling to turn around. I turned around in my chair slowly. Through the reflection of my PC monitor, I almost instantly saw a silhouette standing at the sliding glass door outside. Just a complete dark outline of a person, standing completely still and facing me. My stomach dropped. I whipped around and for a split second, I saw the outline a bit clearly. A man wearing a heavy coat and a hood pulled tight over his head. But before my eyes adjusted, he stepped out of view. I didn't even think. I called the police immediately. While the dispatcher was asking what was happening, I heard the unmistakable sound of metal scraping against metal upstairs. My front door lock. He was trying to pick or open it. I whispered to the dispatcher that somebody was breaking in. She told me to get somewhere safe, but before I could even reply again, I heard my front door creak open from upstairs. I started backing up toward the basement stairs, but I dropped my phone. I heard the man laughing and screaming with his pounding footsteps getting closer to the stairway. I was panicking so bad, I didn't even try to go for my phone. I put my big boots on that I used to wear when I went ice fishing or for deep snow. Luckily, I brought them downstairs with me after shoveling my walkway that night. Put my coat on and booked it out of the sliding glass door. I looked around and when I saw the coast was clear, I ran like a bat out of hell. No chance I was going to stay to fight whoever this was. I didn't even have my keys. I just sprinted across the yard, slipping once or twice until I reached the neighbor's house. They let me in after I banged on their door like a madman. I used their phone to call the police. I waited with them until the officers showed up and went to confront whoever was in my house. Except, of course, he was gone. They searched the whole place and eventually let me come back over. When I walked in, I felt sick. My house was trashed. Not burglarized, but utterly destroyed. Every cabinet ripped open. My couch was slashed. Kitchen drawers dumped out. My bedroom mattress flipped. Clothes scattered everywhere. My computer was even knocked over, and my phone was found smashed in the basement. Nothing missing, just pure vandalism. Like this guy had a pure rage moment on me and took it out on my house, or something, I don't know. On the big whiteboard I kept in the living room for planning work stuff, the weirdo had written, and I quote, "I'll be back, sleep tight," with a smiley face. The cops told me I shouldn't stay there that night. No shit, I thought. I went to a friend's place and I didn't sleep more than 20 minutes that night. The next morning, I talked to my landlord and told him I wanted out of the lease immediately, and I wasn't negotiating. I wasn't staying another night. He agreed after the cops explained everything. They told me they found footprints in the snow circling my house several times. Same tread pattern as the ones near the sliding door. Same pattern at all three entrances he knocked on. They never found the man. The truck never came back, and I was all moved out within a week. I still don't know why he chose my house or what he wanted. But the thing that messed with me the most wasn't the knocking or the fact that he was practically a shadow when I saw him. It was realizing how long he must have been watching me that night, learning the layout of my house, knowing exactly when to knock, knowing when I was distracted, and knowing when to come inside. I haven't lived alone since, and I don't know if I'll want to for a long time, if ever. I moved into this house because it was cheap and quiet. It sits at the edge of a small town, the last one on a dead-end street. Backyard is decently sized, then there's a rough line of trees, and behind that, it's just woods. When I signed the lease in summer, that felt peaceful. In the winter, it felt like the world stopped right at that tree line. This all happened last January, during a stretch where it snowed almost every day.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games that's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
I work from home, so I'd gone 3 or 4 days without really leaving the house. My schedule was just wake up, work, eat, stare at a screen, and sleep. The first time I saw the light, I wasn't even thinking about the woods. Out in the trees, a small glow flickered again, low and steady. It wasn't a car or anything reflecting off the snow. It looked almost like somebody had set off a little lantern down in the woods and walked away from it. It didn't move an inch. I watched it for maybe a full minute, waiting for some normal explanation to appear. A person walking, a car backing up, another light, nothing. Eventually, it went out in this soft way, like somebody put something over it. I stared at the spot for another minute, then told myself it was probably some hunter or a neighbor's kid messing around. The next morning I checked. The snow in my yard was smooth except for a single set of boot prints. They came out of the trees off to the left, cut across the back of the yard, followed my fence line for a while, then curved and disappeared back into the woods on the right side. No prints straight to the house. No clusters by the door. Just a big, lazy arc around my backyard, like somebody walked the edge, looked around, and left. It bothered me, but not enough to freak out. I decided whoever it was must have been passing through and picked a weird route. I don't know, people do weird stuff. I went back inside and tried to drop it. Two nights later, the light came back. I was in the living room this time, laptop open, TV off. My blinds were half open on the sliding door. I saw the glow in the glass before I saw it outside. Same spot, more or less. Maybe a little bit more centered behind my house. A single small light between the trunks. No flares, no movement. Just there. This time it felt intentional. I stood by the glass and watched it a bit longer than I probably should have. While I was just standing there, it started to drift. Not toward the house, but parallel to it. Sliding slowly behind the trees, like whoever had it was walking a line. Then it stopped again. That's when I got that stiff, tight feeling in my chest that says, "This is not right, even if you can't explain why." I didn't go outside. I locked the back door again and shut all the blinds and pretended that made any difference. The next morning, I went straight out back. More footprints. Same tread pattern. Same size by the look of it. They came out of the woods closer to the middle this time, walked in a straight line toward the yard, and then paced. Not random wandering. A straight back and forth track near the middle of the yard. Somebody had walked one line over and over again. Then a curve that cut toward the fence and back into the trees. A worn down strip of snow in the center of my yard for no good reason. That's when I stopped telling myself it was nothing. Over the next few days, it became a pattern. Not every night, but most. I'd see that glow in the trees sometime after 11, some nights further back, some nights closer. Always in a slightly different place. Never exactly the same as before. Then the next morning, new footprints. Sometimes they'd skim the fence, and sometimes they'd crisscross in weird ways. One day, it looked like they'd walked a big rough circle in my yard. Another day, it looked like they'd walked to the same patch and stood there long enough to stomp it flat. Still never coming right up to the house. Never at the doors. That's what made it weird. It felt like he knew exactly where my line of comfort was and was just standing outside of it. At the end of the week, I was barely sleeping. I kept imagining what he looked like out there. I hadn't seen him yet, just the light, just the tracks, but my brain filled in the blanks. I checked my locks at least 3 times every night. I left the TV on just to have sound inside that wasn't the wind. By the time I cracked, it wasn't fear that pushed me over. It was being tired and pissed off. It was like 3 in the morning, closer to dawn than midnight. I'd finally drifted off on the couch when a faint glow on the ceiling woke me up. The light was back, leaking through the slats of my blinds. I just lay there, staring at the ceiling, feeling my heart pound. Then I got mad. I put my boots on over my pajamas, grabbed my heavy coat and the bright flashlight I keep by the front door, and walked straight out of the back without thinking too hard about it. If I stopped to think, I'd probably talk myself out of it. The cold hit like a slap. The air burned my nose, and the snow came up to almost my calves. The little light in the woods looked smaller now that I was outside, but somehow more real. I walked across my yard, following my own old tracks until they ran out. After that, I headed straight toward the glow, leaving a new set of tracks behind me. The closer I got to the trees, the quieter everything felt. The wind dropped. The sound from the road faded. It was just crunch after crunch. When I reached the tree line, I hesitated for half a second. Then I stepped in. The snow was patchy under the branches. I could see clearer now. The light wasn't a lantern hanging. It was a small campfire. Pathetic, really. Low flames and more embers than anything. Next to it, sitting on a log, was a man. He had a winter hat, his hood up, and a heavy coat. Thick snow pants and glove. His hands were out over the fire. His head turned slowly when my flashlight hit him, like this was the most normal thing in the world. We stared at each other. "You're on my property," I said. My voice came out way shakier than I wanted it to. He blinked once. His eyes looked dull, like he hadn't really slept in a long time.
"Didn't know you were going to come out,"
he said. Like I'd walked into his living room. "Yeah, well, you've been out here for days," I said. "People don't camp behind someone's house without saying anything, you know." He didn't apologize and didn't explain. "I like the trees," he said simply. "Good cover." The way he said cover made something in my stomach twist. My flashlight moved off of him and swept the little clearing. There was a tarp half tied between two trees behind him, acting like a windbreak, a plastic crate, a cheap sleeping bag, and a metal pot. It looked like he'd been out there a while, but he also could have packed up in 30 seconds if he wanted to. "How long have you been out here?" I asked. He shrugged. "A bit." "Look, you can't just stay here," I said. "If you need help, I can call someone. Shelter, I don't know, but you can't sit out here staring at my house all night." The words came out before I thought about what I was admitting, that I knew he'd been watching. That's the first time he really smiled. Small and quick, but it was real. "I wasn't staring," he said. "Just watching patterns." "Patterns of what?" He looked past me, toward my house through the trees. "Lights, curtains, when you move around, all that." He said it casually, like he was talking about the weather. I took a step back without meaning to. "Hey man, I'm calling the cops if you're still out here tomorrow," I said. He said, "Okay." Didn't say, "Try it." He just let the smile fade and turned his attention back to the fire, like I was boring him now.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what it feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
I left before my nerves gave out, walking faster than I meant to back to my yard. By the time I reached my porch and looked back, the trees were just dark shapes and the little flame was barely visible. Inside, my hand shook so hard it took two tries to lock the door. I told myself I'd done something about it and that he'd be gone by the morning. The idea of trying to explain that conversation to a cop made my skin crawl. "He likes watching my curtains" isn't a sentence I wanted to say out loud to another person yet. When I woke up, there was no light. I checked the woods first. No glow and no movement. The clearing looked dark from my yard. For a second, I thought maybe he had packed up and left in the night and that would be the end of it. But it felt wrong that he'd leave before I followed through on the "I'll call someone" part, like he'd predicted my bluff. I went back out there. His camp looked exactly the same from a distance. When I stepped into the clearing, I realized what was off. He was gone, but his stuff wasn't. The fire pit was full of blackened ash, still faintly warm under the top crust when I touched it with my boot. The tarp still hung. The sleeping bag was rolled but left behind, and the crate sat where it had been. Everything looked like he'd left in a hurry or planned to come back. I should have called the cops right then, but instead I started looking. Inside the crate were papers and photographs. The photos were cheap prints, glossy but already warping from being damp. The top one was of my house, back view and sliding door. The angle was from the tree line, from about where I was standing actually. Under it were more, my house from different angles, daytime, nighttime, the front door, the side window, the kitchen window with me standing in plain view, one where I was on the back porch, hood up and looking at my phone. Some were zoomed in prints of my windows at night. In a few, you could clearly see me at my desk, my head bent toward the screen. Under the photos were loose notebook pages. He'd ripped them out of different notebooks, different colors of lines, different margins. They were full of cramped handwriting. Arrives home usually at 5 to 6. Lights off by 1 most nights. Watches TV in the living room, sometimes falls asleep there. Sits alone and eats at the counter. On one page at the top, he'd written my address. Under it said, "Back is good. Trees close. No dog. No close neighbor windows." I don't remember when I pulled my phone out, but I know I was already talking when I realized my hands were shaking again. The dispatcher immediately took me serious when I said, "There's a camp in my woods behind my house, and it's full of pictures of me." Two officers met me in the yard, and I walked them out there. They put gloves on and started going through everything. Besides the photos and notes, there was a backpack with clothes, a worn-out ski mask, a big hunting knife in a sheath, and a smaller bag containing a handful of syringes and little plastic baggies with some kind of powdery stuff in them. The other officer called me over to a notebook he'd found shoved into a crack in a tree. It was duct tape along the spine and filthy. He opened it midway. At the top of the page he'd written, "Lives alone. Good. Underlined twice." Underneath, in the same cramped handwriting, "Keeps to himself. Good view from the tree line. Schedule predictable. No visitors after dark." lower down, started noticing me, comes to the window more often, tension up. The last line on that page, written darker, was, "Came out tonight, stood close, nervous but brave. It's time to move on. Leave gear and loop back later." The date was the night I confronted him. They searched the woods for a while after that. They found another small clearing further in with an older fire pit, some trash frozen in the snow, and some more footprints heading toward a service road. No sign of him. A detective even came out and asked me a bunch of questions and took the notebook, the photos, the drugs, and the knife. There wasn't much else they could do at this point in time and promised to increase patrols. A week later, I got a short update, though. Some of the other addresses in that notebook matched break-in reports in a town about an hour away. A couple matched calls about a suspicious person watching the house from last winter. They still hadn't found him. I still think about that last line sometimes. Time to move on. Leave gear and loop back later. Guy was just one of several. Like, leaving all that stuff behind wasn't panic, it was a plan. And somewhere in some other patch of woods, there's probably another little campfire burning behind someone else's house and another stack of photos curling in the cold. The storm hit overnight, and by the time I woke up, the whole street was dead. No lights anywhere, not even the houses on the main road. My generator had kicked on sometime before I got out of bed, so I didn't even realize there was an outage until I looked outside. Everyone else's house was dark. Mine was the only one with any sort of power or life dwelling out of it. It made me feel a little bit guilty for some reason. Like I was somehow cheating them out. I don't know, I'm weird. LOL. I was in the kitchen making oatmeal when I heard a knock. I thought it might be one of my neighbors checking if they could put food in my fridge or something. That's happened before. When I opened the door, I recognized the man standing there, but only barely. He lived farther down the street, or at least I thought he did. I'd only ever seen him getting out of his car with his two kids. Always quick waves and no conversations. Both kids were with him now. They looked cold. The boy kept rubbing his sleeves like he was trying to warm his hands inside the coat. The girl's nose was bright red. "Hey," the man said, giving this apologetic half smile. "So, sorry to bother you. Our heat's out. Been getting colder by the minute since last night. The house is unbelievably freezing. Saw you had power and thought maybe we could warm up here. Just for a bit. I'd be happy to give you some cash for the inconvenience," he said. This was hands down the weirdest encounter I'd ever had in my entire life already, but I felt like I had no choice but to help. I felt that instinctive pressure to say yes before I even fully processed what he was asking. The kids looked miserable, and he kept glancing over his shoulder toward the road like he didn't want to stand outside too long. "Yeah, it's okay," I said. "Come on in. I'll get some hot chocolate going." They stepped inside carefully, like they weren't sure if they were supposed to make noise. I told them to put their boots by the mat so they wouldn't track snow everywhere. The kids did it immediately. No complaints and no dragging their feet. Almost too quickly. Seemed like well-behaved kids, I remember thinking. The man introduced himself as Mark. The kids didn't say their names. He said them for them. "This is Lucas and Maya," he said, patting their shoulders. I gave them all blankets and turned the TV on low. The kids sat on the couch without asking for anything. Not even what they were allowed to watch. They kept glancing at him like they needed his approval just to sit. "You live here alone?" Mark asked after a few minutes, looking around the living room. "Yeah," I said, "just me." He nodded in this way that I felt like he'd already guessed that, or asked around. I tried making small talk, mostly because the silence with him standing there felt heavy. He answered everything casually, but vaguely. Where he worked, what brought him here. Just generic answers with nothing specific to follow up on. The kids didn't look up from the TV barely once. A couple of hours passed. The outage updates kept saying, "No estimate available." I told them they could stay until the power came back. He thanked me. A lot, like too much. Every time I said no problem, he'd say something like, "Not everybody would do this," or "We really needed this." And I'd just nod because I didn't know how else to respond. By afternoon, the storm got worse. Thick snow was piling up faster than the plows could deal. The sky looked like one big white blur. I kept shucking outside, even though nothing was changing. Something about having strangers in the house made me more aware of all the little sounds. Floor creaks, heater clicks, wind hitting the siding, etc. Around 7, I told them I'd set up sleeping arrangements. Mark could take the guest room, and the kids could sleep together on the couch. He agreed quickly, almost like he didn't want me reconsidering. I went to bed early because I suddenly felt drained. Not physically, just from the social pressure of having people I barely knew in my house. I read for about 20 minutes before the words started blurring. I remember thinking that everything was fine, that I'd made a good decision helping them, but right before I fell asleep, I also remember this small nagging thought. Why didn't the kids ever talk to me? That was about all I remembered before I woke up at around 1 a.m. to a sound in the hallway. At first, I wasn't sure if it was real. I lay there listening. House made occasional noises like everyone else's house does, but this one was different. Slow, careful, like somebody shifting their way onto a floorboard to test it. Then my door creaked. Not much, just enough that I could see the crack widening. I pushed myself up a little. Hello? The door opened further, and somebody stepped into the room. It was Mark. He didn't turn on the light. He didn't say anything at first, just stood there, like he was letting me get used to him being there. Are you okay? I finally asked. He blinked slowly, like he had to pull himself out of a thought. Sorry, he said. Didn't mean to wake you. I was, hungry. I figured I'd ask you if you mind if I make a sandwich. His voice didn't match the situation at all. He sounded like he was reading lines, and he wasn't smiling, or really making any expression. Yeah, I said after a second. That's fine. He nodded once, backed out, and closed the door quietly. I waited to hear kitchen noises, like footsteps, cabinets, or anything. But nothing. Just the generator outside in the wind. That's when the regret started hitting me. Shouldn't have let them stay. Shouldn't have opened the door in the first place. Every tiny thing I'd brushed off earlier suddenly felt wrong. The way he stood behind the kids, the way they watched him, the way he'd asked if I lived alone, like he was confirming something. I stayed awake after that. My heart wouldn't slow down. I tried reading again just to distract myself, but I kept glancing at the door every few seconds. At some point I must have dozed off, because the next thing I remember is waking up to someone breathing above me, right next to the bed. I opened my eyes and there was a figure leaning over me, wearing black clothes, gloves, and a mask that covered everything except the eyes. I screamed and tried to shove them away. He grabbed my wrist instantly. It's okay, he whispered. Calm down. It was Mark. Even with the mask, his voice was unmistakable. He pushed down harder when I struggled. I kicked and managed to hit him in the knee. His grip loosened for a second and I rolled sideways off the bed. He grabbed my ankle and yanked me back. I clawed at the floor trying to get traction. Then I heard a small voice from the hallway. Stop hurting her, Lucas screamed, with Maya crying somewhere behind him. We called the police, she said. Mark froze completely. He didn't move for a solid second, like he was computing something. Then he let go and bolted out of the room. I heard the front door slam. The kids kept crying until the sirens showed up. The police got there in record time, like maybe 5 or 6 minutes. They tackled him outside in the snow. He barely resisting them, just muttering something under his breath. Inside, the kids sat on the couch shaking. The girl kept rubbing her hands like she was trying to wipe something off them, and the boy wouldn't look up at all. I kept saying, hey, you're safe now. You're okay. Even though I didn't feel too sure about anything. One of the officers crouched down in front of them and asked how they called. The girl pointed toward the wall phone in the kitchen. I hadn't even thought about it, but the generator had kept that line active. I'm still thankful for that stupid landline. If they hadn't used it, I don't know how long everything would have gone on. Another officer pulled me aside to ask questions. How I knew the man, how long they'd been in the house, and whether anything else happened. I told them everything I could remember. They scribbled notes so fast I couldn't even follow their handwriting. It wasn't until maybe 10 minutes later that one of the officers walked back in from outside. He wasn't panicked, but he wasn't calm either. He looked at the kids first. Can you tell me your names? He asked gently. They hesitated. The boy whispered something too quiet for me to catch. The officer nodded, then set the way to radio something in. A minute later, he came back over to me and said, did the man ever tell you he was their father? Yeah, I said, or he implied it. He introduced them like they were his. The officer pressed his lips together like he was trying not to react too strongly. They're not his kids, he said. They fit the description of two missing children from out of state. It's been years since anyone has heard of them or seen them. My stomach dropped. Everything inside of me went hollow at once. The girl started crying again when she overheard. By the time they walked him past me in handcuffs, he had snow stuck in his hair and on his sleeves. He didn't look angry or scared, just annoyed, like this was a setback in his long plan, not the end of it. He glanced up at me once.
Looking for a little Hollywood-style fun? Check out Ryan Seacrest's 10K Ways exclusively at Chumba Casino. There's 10,000 ways to play. Get spinning for free at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
You weren't supposed to wake up, he whispered. Quiet but clear. One of the officers shoved him forward before I could even react. But the way he said it, That bored, matter-of-fact tone made everything feel so freaking creepy, like he'd already accepted whatever came next because he'd done this before.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. Want to bring a little Hollywood excitement to your day? Take a few spins with Chumba Casino's brand new game, Ryan Seacrest's 10K Ways. It's free and features 10,000 ways to play, giving you nonstop action, including thrilling bonus respins and cascading reels. Every spin brings something new, so step into the spotlight. Enjoy the excitement and play today at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.